Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, we're ready to kick off the holiday because it is Christmas Eve. So Merry Christmas to all those who celebrate the birth of Christ. And happy holidays to those who don't. I'm just kidding. I've got a special show today, but let me get through the obligatories as I try to, you know, focus on those things that we need to focus on. As you know, the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and this is the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions of where we need to go. We're not a fusion of news and entertainment. There's lots of shows out there that do that. And so we try to avoid ourselves of that kind of paradigm. I believe that knowledge is power, and by giving you, actually it becomes power when you exercise it, let's be clear, and I believe in giving you the knowledge. We want to be able to help you exercise that so that you can exert power politically. Because if the people are the fountain of political power and we know what we're doing, we can get exactly what we want, which means that we can get full compliance to the Constitution. Every single problem we are facing today has everything to do with noncompliance to the Constitution. Now, let me get through some of these endorsements. I don't want to call them advertisers or sponsors because they actually aren't. These are companies I endorse. Now, next week we're going to be going through how to set effective goals so that hopefully by the new year you're ready to actually make improvements in your life. And one of those critical things that we all need to be able to make improvements in our life is our financial health. And so contact Gary Smith at Fortitude Financial Coaching. Go ahead and reach out to him, get him involved, and he will help you get on a path of becoming financially independent and being able to live like, as Dave Ramsey says, like no one else. And so, Fortitude Financial Coaching, to take control and to actually become disciplined financially. Free Constitution classes are out at constitutioneducation.us. That's Keith Broder's classes. And there is also timbernation.com. I know it's really too late to get that hardwood furniture for your Christmas, but I can tell you that next year you will be able to get good old American hardwood furnishings. So check them out and go, please look at what these guys have to offer. They will be able to, I think, tap some ideas that you would never ever have considered. Anyway, we also have radio dust covers at radiodustcovers.com to cover that high-end audio equipment and or your CB, ham radio, anything that you spend a lot of money on in electronics. Some people, that's in computers. Check out radiodustcovers.com to protect that expensive gear and Ad Local. We actually do have promos and ads for Ad Local. Again, this is an endorsement, not a sponsorship. If you are looking to take your business down the next step of whether that be email management or domain hosting, what have you, on the ISP side, check out adlocal.com. And so with that, we have our comment line, 425-270-5416, and it sounds like I have that frog back today, so forgive me. We're actually heading into a healthy Christmas celebration. I hope you're doing the same, because this is kind of the time of year where a lot of people don't, you know, maintain the good health or what have you. I remember it was common in our household. My father would always come down with the flu or the cold or something right around Christmas time frame. Now, let me move forward into the special Christmas show that we have today. Now, some of you have actually heard me refer to, if you've been listening for a long time, you've heard me refer to Platonism. And I kind of have to revisit that term every once in a while because it's been a long time. Why give credit to Marx and his labeling of statism when he wasn't even the first guy to even think of this? Marx and Engels weren't even creative and or original in what they designed. As a matter of fact, they really went out on a limb in their Communist Manifesto, and they made some really blatantly false accusations, like all labor is equal, like that guy that does open heart surgery or brain surgery and those types of things, their labor is equivalent to the guy or the person that, you know, cleans the bathroom or the person that, you know, because these, there are the people that actually take your bags out to your car or bag your groceries at the grocery store. There are what we call entry-level jobs, transitional jobs, and that's why they exist, is so that people can act. These should not be, I would say, what do they call that, life-earning or life-sustaining type of jobs where you should be able to, by bagging groceries, be able to pay for a house and send your kids off to college? Come on. We need entry-level jobs, and that's what we have to do. And every time government gets involved in creating what we call jobs and getting into the labor market, minimum wage, those types of things, 9 times out of 10, they actually have a bad effect and actually cause unemployment and all sorts of problems, not to mention inflation. But let's move on to the Christmas program, can we? Anyway, so a lot of times I refer to this thing called Platonism. And today, this particular show, because it's focused on Christmas, what we're hoping to do is give you a macro view on how the Platonists first began what I will assert. This was the first time they started playing around with manipulation, and they actually took this to a global proportion. Keep in mind, the Platonist efforts began, the current Platonist efforts began in 1776 with Adam Weishaupt and his charter on the Illuminati. And I, you know, I don't have any spooky music, but I know that a lot of people, when they hear Illuminati, they go, oh, okay, here's a conspiracy theorist. You know, I didn't even call it the Illuminati. That's what Adam Weishaupt called it. Okay, and if you really want to read a really good book on conspiracy theories, it was written back in the 1790s. I think it was by Sir John Robinson. And it's, I believe it's something, and you can actually get this. It's in PDF, and it's on my website, Reclaiming the Republic. I believe it's right there on the Red State Talk Radio podcast page. But if you go there and you actually look up that book, or you pull it in offline, you'll find that it's the conspiracy to undermine the religions and governments of Europe. So back in those days, they were already recognized that there were efforts and a movement afoot. And you can actually see how successful they were, because at the end of the, what was that, the 18th century, going into the 19th century, Europe actually abandoned its Christianity for the most part. They became secular, and we can see exactly what happened in so doing. So anyway, so the Platonist effort was a direct contrast to what the framers were doing here in our republic in trying to establish a government and a land of individual liberty and individual sovereignty. So with that, as we move on, we start, you know, kind of looking at these perceptions that were perceived as good for all the Platonists, and what they believed in was necessary for setting the stage for, well, come to find out, future manipulations. And we're living in the land of manipulations today. This is why an accurate historic perspective regarding Christmas is really important. Now, many people, many people believe that American Christmas actually came from England. It migrated here from England, like a lot of our customs. That is au contraire. And so we'll actually get into that as we kind of move forward. But what we want to do, is we want to give you the least amount of filters possible. So we want to try to cover all the bases on a historical view of what Christmas really was, and or what paganism and the winter solstice and the winter wilding is what some people refer to it as, and how it was morphed into this Christian holiday. Now, let me preface this. Any day of the year that we can focus on Christ, then that's a good day. And that's something that we should always be doing. And this time of year, we really build up and focus on Christ. Or do we? Most people today are so focused on the materialism and the gift giving and the gift receiving and all of that, the exchanging of gifts, that we've completely lost the true meaning of Christmas and what the spirit of, or the perceived spirit, what was that they were trying to create. So with that, as we go into break, we've got three more segments to kind of cover a lot of history, and we're going to give you a lot of facts, and hopefully we'll be able to get through this so that I can actually provide some final thoughts and some final wishes as we end this year, so that we can prepare, because don't forget, January 3rd, we've got a big bomb we're going to drop right here. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so full disclosure here. There was a gentleman by the name of Kenneth Cooks who actually did some of the initial work. When I actually started looking into this, I go, wow, this is kind of interesting. And so I think he kind of covers some of it, and you can find a lot of this stuff on your own if you really start looking for the origins of what we consider Christmas in America. And to be clear, as we understand what and how Christmas was created here in America, that's what was exported to the world. Because if you really look at what was going on in Europe. It had nothing to do with Christianity and or the birth of Christ. It was all paganism, and it was truly derived of paganism. And so in the early 17th century, a wave of religious reform started changing the way Christmas was celebrated, or let's just say the winter solstice and paganist celebrations of the winter holiday were actually being recognized and celebrated in Europe itself. This was during America's first religious awakening, and our move towards religious tolerance here in America began. So in other words, as we became more open and more tolerant, they became a little less tolerant regarding Christianity and religion. Because in Europe, there's a guy by the name of Oliver Cromwell and his Puritan forces that took over England in 1645. Now, I believe the first awakening was somewhere around 1650, 1660, something like that, here in America. So when we start looking at, you know, what was going on here, what was going on there, there was kind of this religious awakening that was getting towards let's just say we were trying to get closer to worshiping Christ, the more pure form of religious worship of Christ and recognizing him. This was after Martin Luther. This is after the Bible. And as we started getting our hands on the Bible, we started actually discovering things. Oh, well, we're not doing certain things. Well, anyway, so Cromwell and his Puritan forces, as they took over, they vowed to rid England of decadence and, as part of their effort, canceled the winter holiday that was kind of being called Christmas. Now, Charles II was the one that, when he was restored to the throne, with him it came the return of the popular winter wilding holiday. Now, I don't know if they were really calling it Christmas, but it was the pagan celebration. It was nothing about what we considered the statesman or the nobleman of England, the shire, or, you know, the esquire that, you know, took in the poor. As we kind of started reading supposedly these stories of what Christmas was in England, do not buy into that, because we're going to actually expose what those stories really were. They were just concoctions. Keep in mind, this was a precursor to the Glorious Revolution, right? So when they came back and Charles II restored, you know, these paganistic rituals and so forth, well, this was just before the Glorious Revolution right there in England. Now, at the same time, a little bit before, the pilgrims actually started separating. They were actually English separatists who were very staunch in worshiping Christianity. Most of the people that stayed behind, they weren't hardcore ideologues, if that makes sense. They were more of a probably more secular or non-denominational, or actually just indifferent regarding religious worship. They just weren't hardcore ideologues. Let's just leave it at that. As I spoke of, and as I speak every year regarding Thanksgiving, we actually want to help you understand that Thanksgiving really is this nation's most spiritual holiday. And so what we're trying to do, and just like what they did in the original Puritan Thanksgiving, they established this thing called socialism. What we're trying to do is we're trying to identify, or at least help expose, these ideologies and how they kind of start creating these links and actually start obscuring or obfuscating what was really going on, and trying to create this life of equality where everybody is, remember Marx, and all labor being equal, that's what their efforts have been focused on. Now, away with this, you know, this socialism at this point, and let's just look and focus on the pagan version of Christmas, because in America, this was not a holiday at all. And it was really a wilding type of celebration where people were getting hardcore drunk, they were getting riotous, and so forth. And as a matter of fact, I submit evidence to you that if you go and read the resolutions of 1798 by Virginia, which Madison and the state legislators were working on, that was actually approved and signed and promulgated. So they approved it on the 24th. They sent it out on the 25th of December. So what I just told you was the people of America were actually working on Christmas, what we call Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And as a matter of fact, Congress in its very first session, because Christmas Day was during the week, it was actually in session. And back in those days, they did more of their sessions during the winter time frame than they did in the summer or the spring and the fall, because that's when you had to plant your crops and that's when you had to harvest. So most people had that time off during the year so that they could tend to the business of the family, which was the agrarian business. So as we look at the holiday, it wasn't even a holiday in America. There were people that were starting to come here that were actually, you know, incorporating these customs. Now, I've said this before. If you look at all of the different states in America, at that point in time, the origins of one was very unique. New Amsterdam was not a British colony in its origins. It was a Dutch colony. And so when we start looking at how New York had some unique things about it, like, you know, the loyalists for Britain and the crown during the Revolution, some of the paganistic holidays, that they were a little bit more paganistic than the other states and so forth. So getting back to this timeline, from 1659 to 1681, the celebration of pagan Christmas was actually outlawed in Boston. In other words, this pagan holiday of getting drunk and actually being drunk and disorderly in public was outlawed. Anyone exhibiting what they called what we call the Christmas spirit, being cheerful and drunk, was actually, you were fined 5 shillings. In contrast, down in the Jamestown settlement in Virginia, Captain John Smith reported that the pagan Christmas was enjoyed by all and passed, quote, without incident, close quote. So we can see that the one colony or the one state that was founded on commercialism, well, they were actually starting to embrace the winter wilding, but up in the Puritanistic New England area, they weren't. Now, New York was, again, a different colony in a different state. It was actually New Amsterdam, and before it became New York. And so they were actually gainfully employed in celebrating, because New York was also a commercial venture. It was not a religious establishment like the New England states. Almost all of the New England states, from Rhode Island and the other states that branched off, I think New Hampshire, Connecticut, most of those states, because they were breakoffs from the Puritans, what we find is that they had a religious founding, they were founded basically on religion, as I was saying. So anyway, as we start really looking at this transition, because that's what we really started seeing both in Europe and America, there was this transition of this riotous living. And so Christmas was actually, really had very little to do with Christ and the birth of Jesus. After the American Revolution, the English customs fell out of favor, including the pagan Christmas. In fact, Congress, as I told you, was in session December 25th, 1789, which was their very first session, and it was supposedly the first Christmas under this new American Constitution. There was no wilding or lewd and lascivious or bad behavior. I'm going to have a hard time pronouncing that. Anyway, so there was really a moderate tone here in the Americas, and the American people were becoming more, I'll just say, more disciplined, more enlightened regarding how they were to behave and how they were behaving publicly. They were creating, and they actually created a very civil society. So getting drunk and disorderly was becoming, you know, less tolerable. Well, but you got to remember that certain things cause the ebbing and flowing of, you know, bad behavior, and a part of that is the economy. And so when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what happened and how we started migrating to Christmas.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so actually, let me kind of give you a forward look real quick. As we see the founding of this nation, and as I told you, because of the Revolution, prior to the Constitution being formed and being ratified, there was a turning away of the paganistic holidays. America was literally becoming a little bit more enlightened than their European brethren. And more importantly, when you look at how long we've had to go to migrate into embracing Christmas, what we call this Christian holiday now, right? But it's a pagan holiday at that point in time. It wasn't until 1870, just to keep that in mind. So it almost took a century for America to embrace this newfound holiday that took the doldrums out of the very bitter and cold winters to help, you know, people's... Because, again, what were the staples in society back in those days? Well, they didn't have refrigeration. They didn't have ways of keeping food. So different ways of storing meat. They used to store meat in big, huge vats of fat. That's right, in fat. And so it was all salted. So if you look at how they had to live and how they had to survive, they did things that we realized we needed to get away from salt. We needed to get away from certain types of dietary things and practices. But this was all before the advent of refrigeration. The even way back, even down in Christ's time, they fermented wine because that's how you could actually keep juice, grape juice or what have you, from becoming spoiled so that you didn't die of poisoning. So the fermentation process of juices and beverages was a very long-term standing process. Why? Because, again, they didn't have the ability to refrigerate these juices. And so one of the things that became a staple, and as a matter of fact, we talked about this with the Whiskey Rebellion, was hard liquor was a staple, a way of getting some of the nutrients out of the grain. And I think it was really more of a buzz because as they started distilling and moving away from beers and ciders and those types of things, they actually started making it more of a hard liquor. But one of those things that you know, it was rationed. It was just an embraced part of society because it really was a staple. Alcohol and liquor were considered staples back then. So anyway, just trying to, you know, give you this forward look real quick. So after the American Revolution and this, you know, concept of what we say, Christmas was not even a glimmer in America's eyes. At this point in time, Christmas was recognized again as a pagan holiday and not a Christian event. It had no association to Christ whatsoever. In the 19th century, the Americans began to embrace this thing called a pagan winter wilding. They called Christmas. Now, elitists in America reinvented this Christmas pagan holiday and changed it from a loud and rowdy carnival holiday and a wilding, as I call it, into a family-centered day of peace and nostalgia. Interesting, huh? So how did they do this? Well, what happened in the early 1800s that most people should get their interest piqued into making of the Christmas holiday was this, this gentleman who actually started writing stories. The end of the 18th century was the beginning of class conflict and turmoil in Europe. And as a matter of fact, the French Revolution was really about the commoners coming out of the communes. This was the first communist revolution. We've talked about this before. And the Platonists, actually their plan for Platonism was to revolt and convert France into a communistic state. What they didn't anticipate, because apparently Adam Weishaupt didn't read Aristotle's book on politics, because Aristotle's book on politics pointed out that you really had to be careful and wary of demagogues rising up in the midst of a revolution. And so that's exactly what happened. They lost their focus on trying to create this utopian society of a communist type of government. And what ended up happening is Napoleon Bonaparte rose to power, and history was rewritten that the communist revolution never was. And so that's one of the reasons why we look at it as more of a change from a one despot of a crown to a despot of a dictator. I'm just here to tell you that if you look at the attempts of communism throughout the world, it has failed, it has failed, it has failed. And the only way that they were able to succeed is through levels of support by the elitists and the global community. If you didn't know, go look at where Stalin was before the Russian Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution. And they realized, not Stalin, I'm sorry, Lenin. Where was Lenin? I think he was in a cell here in North America. And they had to let him go so that he could actually go and become the leader for this communist revolution to see if it would actually take hold. Because beforehand, the last nation that tried to implement communism or socialism and statism was Germany. And they had an abject failure, and that led them straight into World War I. And at that point in time, the Bolshevik Revolution was stewing and brewing in Russia, because that actually happened in the 1860s when all of a sudden they had 22 million serfs and slaves that became what we would say available to actually start having to live communally, and it really started baking communism and socialism into Russia. And so they were primed by the time of the turn of the century going into the 20th century. Anyway, back to the early 19th century, unemployment was high and gang rioting by the disenchanted classes often occurred during what we called the Christmas season or the winter wilding season, or what some of the Americans at the time liked to call, and this actually this was a term that they used, the winter wilding. In 1828, the New York City Council instituted the city's first police force in response to a winter holiday, which basically was scrubbed as Christmas, and it was a riot. Even before this, elitists were being harassed and galvanized the elitist intent in beginning to change the way Christmas was celebrated in America. So what do I mean by elitist? The people that had money, the people that had influence, well, they didn't like this winter wilding because they were the targets of the harassment. It was their houses that were being overran or being threatened. You know, when they were out in public, they were being chased. They didn't like the brutish behavior and this uncivil behavior. Again, as I just pointed out, it was in 1828 where actually, because the winter wilding was so bad in New York, they instituted the police department. Okay, so this winter wilding was not the spirit of giving and compassion. It was literally just, you know, drowning in your sorrows, and because you're poor, freezing, hungry, or what have you, you know, well, everybody was spending or everybody was consuming their winter stores of alcohol, wine, brews, what have you, or hard liquor. And so this became the wilding time of year. In 1819, Washington Irving, there's that gentleman. Wow, some people have heard of him. He was the man that wrote, quote, "The Sketchbook of Jeffrey Crayon," close quote. And he was basically this gentleman, this English gentleman, where these series of stories about the celebration of Christmas in an English manor house began shifting the paradigm of Christmas here in America. Oh, well, you know, this is what they were doing in England. They're so much more civilized than we are. Well, or so we thought. The stories were about an English squire who invited the peasants into his home for the holiday. And in contrast to the problems faced in American society, the two groups mingled effortlessly. So in other words, it was just like this harmonious time that the elitist would open up their homes and they would be able to share with these poor people. Now, was this necessarily a message to the elitist in America, or was this more of a let's just say, an act or a display, a verbal display in a story of desperation of getting people, poor people, to behave better. Well, when we come back, we'll get to the rest of the story, and then we're going to give you some facts on this so that that way you can actually make some decisions for yourself on the authenticity of Christmas in America.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so again, these fictional celebrations that were in these Irving Christmas landscapes, if that's what you want to call them, because when you really look at what he was really portraying, these had really nothing based on fact. And as a matter of fact, this was actually, because he was referring to these as ancient customs. To be clear, Irving's book series was not based on any holiday celebration he had attended, and in fact, historians say that Irving's accounts actually were invented in creating traditions by implying that it described the true customs of the season. Wow, that was pretty powerful imagination, right? But if you understand that the fear level in the winter months became so high as we reached the winter solstice for these winter wildings that they needed something to actually start converting people to this noble thing, this noble behavior, so that people would, you know, be civil and not threaten these elitists. So there was a lot to gain for those who had money and affluence to try to swing the perception down this path that, you know, this is a time of year where, you know, we should have peace towards men. And we're going to give you some facts. And we want you to actually research this yourself, because it almost seems unreal or surreal when somebody makes this assertion. Oh, well, you know, Christmas was a fabricated thing and it was all manipulation. If you look at the origins of supposedly these traditions, they actually came from America. So in other words, the birth was done here in America. Now, here's the interesting thing. there's no evidence that the Illuminati were involved in this actual, let's say, conspiracy or in this actual application of manipulation. It just kind of fell onto everybody's lap. Okay? So, as things progressed, in the early 19th century was also the beginning of the Second Awakening, right? When was that? That was the 1820s. Well, the Second Awakening, and as people started swinging to, you know, invigorate themselves religiously, well, hey, shoot, let's invigorate ourselves even more as they're trying to manipulate this better behavior in the 1820s. Because, again, when was Irving beginning to write his sketchbooks? It was in 1819. Okay, so if you start connecting the dots, all of these things were just beginning to happen. And so the evangelical faith was beginning as as our republic was beginning to enjoy peace from the end of the American Revolution. So when we look at the big picture, the War of 1812 was over. We finally had peace. We were finally getting Britain to abide by the treaty. So we didn't have harassments from Europe anymore. So we were finally going down this path of, you know, prosperity. Well, interesting. Now, we also had all of these things being thrown into the mix, such as Irving's attempt to actually create this winter harmony, this this new paradigm for the winter wilding, and this awakening of the evangelical movement. Now, what I want you to understand is the evangelical movement, even though the people were being driven and, inspired by, you know, worshiping Christ and becoming more vigorous in their worship, what actually was driving that awakening of the evangelical movement was capitalism, or I should say money in religion. Because the evangelical movement was setting up troops where they would actually travel from one town to another, and they would, you know, put on these shows and get people to give them money so that they could actually pack up and go. Now, I want you to understand, in the paradigm of Christian faith at that point in time, and even still today, the concept is that the people, you know, that are parishioners to a church would contribute and give, and that money that they would give would be used in hard times to help those, because back in those days, it was a layman's church, and the people that were, you know, operating the church, like John Adams' father, he was a cobbler by profession, but he was a layman or a way leader in his in their particular congregation. And so the money that they had went to helping the community and the members of the church when they needed some help. Now, that all went out the window because all of a sudden, this professional movement of professional preachers, where people, you know, started going and creating these theological schools where you could actually become a preacher and a reverend for money. This was actually a huge change in America, where all of a sudden, if you want to call it capitalism or if you want to call it greed and mammon, where all of a sudden religion started serving money instead of, you know, the principles and the ideological, I will just say, paradigm of true Christianity, where you didn't do things for money. You did things because, you know, this is how we're supposed to treat each other. This is, we're all supposed to be a part of this. But anywho, the technical end, again, of the revolution being right there, right before Irving started writing these things, everything, if you look at what was stirred in this pot or what was actually cooking in this pot, was a perfect recipe for developing this whole new concoction called Christmas based on the birth of Christ instead of this pagan holiday. So, as we move forward, the abolition movement was actually beginning to, you know, to start moving forward too. As a matter of fact, in the 1820s was when Van Buren. I was just trying to remember because he became president after Jackson. Martin Van Buren was the one that created the gag order during the 1820s on slavery. So the abolition movement really started moving forward and moving more in America. And the president, John Adams, John Quincy Adams, actually committed and dedicated the rest of his political career to serve in the U.S. Senate to fight slavery and slavery's new political protector, the Democratic Party. As such, the North and the South were divided on slavery and even on the issue of Christmas. And so many Northerners saw sin in the celebration of the winter wilding. To these people, now you got to remember, they saw sin in this holiday. And so to these people, the different celebrations of Thanksgiving was far more appropriate. In the South, Christmas was an important part of the social season. Not surprisingly, the first three states to make Christmas a legal holiday were in the South: Alabama in 1836, Louisiana, and Arkansas in 1838. Slowly, this new concept of Christmas began to grow, and it began to be manipulated more and more and more. In the years after the Civil War, the Christmas tradition spread across the country. Children's books played an important role in spreading the customs of celebrating and especially teaching people what these traditions, these were all brand new traditions of how to trim trees and the gifts delivered by this guy by the name of Santa Claus, injecting that we all should be giving gifts. Sunday school classes encouraged the celebration of this new Christian version of paganism. Women's magazines were important in suggesting ways to decorate. So if you look at all of these things, well, what did you do to decorate? Well, you had to buy things. You had to, if you didn't have it, then you had to go buy these things. And so miraculously, these stores, Sears, Roebuck, and so forth, these general stores, started catering to this paradigm of celebrating, recognizing, decorating for Christmas. Again, these children's books played an important role in spreading the customs of celebrating Christmas, especially the tradition of trimmed trees and gifts delivered by, again, Santa Claus. The store catalogs began promoting items and sales on items associated to this new Christmas tradition. At this time, literature and progressive press had begun to congeal in manipulating the social affairs in America. President Ulysses S. Grant declared Christmas a legal holiday in 1870. The bill to make Christmas a holiday was introduced into the House of Representatives by Representative Burton Clancy Cook of Illinois. It was approved and passed to the Senate, and we can actually go in and you should read this actually declaration that did this. And we've got the wording here, but I'm not going to go through it. The fact of the matter is as you go through this, you go, well, it really didn't mention anything really about Christ. It was just, mentioning that they were recognizing as a federal government this holiday. By the last quarter of the 19th century, America eagerly decorated trees, caroled, baked, and shopped for the Christmas season. Since that time, materialism, media, advertising, and mass marketing has made Christmas what it is today. Had nothing to do with tradition. Anyway, as you start looking, and what I want you to do is you go look up Christmas carols, because copyrights to the names of songs are out there. You will find that as a religious paradigm, we always celebrate religion with song, and we will find that the origins of most all Christmas songs were in the 1800s, the mid-1800s. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless and Merry Christmas.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.